All right, so first podcast. You guys are nervous?
Yeah, this is the pilot episode right here. Let's start off with introductions. Brittany, that's me.
Christina.
And Patrick.
And our podcast name is Heard of a Murder, which is going to be a true crime podcast where we're going to be basically touching on different crime stories every week. Maybe we'll start branching out to a little bit different things. I don't know where it's going to take us. I guess we're just going to try to see how it goes.
Yeah. Mad talking shit. Going to be talking mad shit.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited. I know you're going to be disagreeing with us a lot, Patrick.
Always.
Because that's
what just his nature.
It's kind of what I do.
Yeah. That's why he's here.
That's him.
You always have to have the argumentative type. Yeah. He's that guy.
Plus, I got to do all the audio.
Yes. And if you just took off, me and Christina would be left like recording on our phones.
Pretty much.
And then trying to edit on GarageBand. You'd have to do one run through it. All right. Do you guys want to get into it?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Okay. So we were going to cover the Maria Pisano case. And I don't know why, but I still want to cover it. And I actually, now in retrospect, think that probably would have been a better case to cover than this one. Because it just was more interesting. But this one was interesting and it still is interesting. So I don't want to downplay it. But just for future reference, I think the next one we do should be the Maria Pisano. But I don't know, Christina, did you want to cover that one with us? Or did you want me to still cover it with you guys?
Let's just see how this one goes first.
Okay.
And I'm curious on how you picked this case or what made you decide to go for this one.
Well, this one, because I am really into true crime, obviously, which is why we started the podcast. But when I was doing some research on what we should cover for this week's episode, I never heard of this, and it's called the Cowden Family Murders, and it's one of the most infamous crime cases in Oregon history, which I'm like, what the fuck? How have I never heard of this murder before?
It's in Oregon?
In Oregon, yeah.
God, I fucking hate Oregon.
You know? Really?
Yeah.
When you look at a lot of serial killers, they all come from Oregon.
Well, I mean, there ain't shit to do in all the rural areas.
Yeah.
They're probably doing a lot of fucking meth out there.
Tons of places to hide bodies.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
In the rural areas.
Well, isn't it always gloomy too? And so like the suicide rate is high up there?
Absolutely. Vampires running rapid.
Like Twilight? The ones that sparkle?
What?
It's true.
No.
Everybody knows.
If it's vampires.
Vampires are in Oregon.
It's got to. No. Vampires don't sparkle. It's the other movie, Underworld.
Yeah.
That's how I picture vampires.
You know why? Just because you like
what's Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, fuck yeah, I do.
Okay.
Hell yeah. You can probably hear the kids in the background.
You want to pause it? You want to see? You can pause it. Okay. So the family that we're covering are, obviously, it's the Cowden family murders. So their last name's the Cowdens. You have a Richard Cowden. He's 28 years old. He's married to Belinda. She's 22. And they have two kids together, 5-year-old David and 5-month-old Melissa. And David was from a previous marriage with Belinda. So the family lived in White City, Oregon, which is located in Jackson County. That's on the southern region of Oregon. It's like any other town in Oregon, which is lots of mountains and incredibly rural. I tried to find a population of the town back in 1974, which is the time that this case takes place, but I couldn't. But back in 2010, I found a census where it said that there's only 7,975 people that live in this town.
Oh, wow. That's a small town.
I thought Lemoore was small.
Yeah.
And I think it's at like 25,000.
Yeah.
And that was in 2010. So could you imagine in 1974?
Like, yeah. That's like Ramona. Ramona got probably around there.
Probably.
Yeah. Small town.
So Richard Cowden worked as a logging truck driver, which is probably your typical Oregon job. Yeah. And it was Labor Day weekend and they didn't have any special plans. Richard was actually going to spend the weekend hauling gravel to work on his driveway. Typical Fowler move. Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to say it.
I don't even have gravel.
You would do that.
Who's Fowler?
Yeah, I don't even have gravel.
So
I don't live out in the country.
So for whatever reason, there's two, depending on the sources you use, the most popular version of the story is that their truck broke down, but then there's another version that says that they were going to borrow a bigger truck to haul the gravel, and then those plans fell through. But for whatever reason, the family actually ended up deciding to go camping, another Patrick move for the weekend. So they did an impromptu camping trip, and they actually used to camp in the Siskiyou Mountains.
No idea where that is.
Okay, so it's kind of weird that when I was covering this case, because yesterday I got a message on my phone. You know those fires up north in California right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are in the Siskiyou Mountains. And it's just crazy because I was covering this case and obviously I was like trying to find the background of like the locations and the geography of everything. And then that popped up and I was like, oh.
So that must be in the Klamath Falls area. I think that's
where. How do you know that? Because it, okay, so the Siskiyou Mountains borders northwestern California and southwestern Oregon. They run approximately 100 miles long and they do run through the Siskiyou National Park and the Klamath National Park.
Yeah. So I have some friends that live in Klamath Falls. That's like the only place I've ever visited Oregon. And it's like right on the border. That's why I remember.
He always has mountains. Like fun facts.
That is like a fun these fact.
Little fun little, facts.
Little FF for you.
I've never heard of any of these. And you're like, oh, that's in Klamath. And I'm like, how the fuck do you know that?
Klamath is beautiful, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think all of Oregon's beautiful if it's not covered in tweakers.
Yeah. I think probably everywhere except like Portland. That's a shithole, but.
Or Seattle.
Yeah, it's a show.
Well, isn't that in Washington?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
like, this is why we need visual.
But I'm also thinking. Like
when we responded to that. Okay.
Your face, though, as soon as you said it, you're like, I just want to take those words back. I'm just trying to pull them back right out of the mic.
Edit this. Like
trying to pull it right out of the mic.
I feel like you sound confident when you said it, though. And that's why I even questioned. I was like, wait a minute.
Conviction is everything. Like the listeners would even be like, oh, yeah, fucking Seattle's in Oregon. Seattle, Oregon. I've always wanted to go there. And so anyways, the family packed up their 1956 Ford pickup truck. And Richard, Melissa, Belinda, and David along... And then the family also had a dog that they brought along. It was the family dog. His name was Droopy. You want to guess what kind of breed he was?
Husky.
Droopy?
A basset hound?
Nailed it.
Sorry. I figured you guys both have husky, so I was just like,
you just jumped on that.
Sorry.
I thought you were going to say that fucking dog you were talking about from Africa.
Hey, every time I say something stupid, I'm going to throw out a question just so someone upstages me and I don't feel so dumb. Okay, so they went camping in a place called Carberry Creek. And it's in the city of Copper. Now, Copper was named after the copper that was mined in the town, but Copper actually no longer exists anymore. So in 19... 19-
the town.
The town.
Yeah.
And then in 1980, Oregon State government ended up damming a lake called Applegate Lake, and they intentionally flooded this entire town. What? So now it's a lake, and that it sits under 200 feet of water.
Well, that's pretty cool.
It is cool, but when you hear like kind of the development of the case, it's not so cool.
Mm.
So
I didn't think it was cool anyways.
That they dammed up a lake or a town?
Yeah.
Well,
there has to be a reason.
I think that a lot of mining towns back in the day when they, you know, they don't mine anymore, the towns kind of disperse because people can't make any money, and then they turn into ghost towns, so it didn't matter.
Well, there's a few cases that other podcasts cover, and one of them, they cover like where they intentionally like paid people for their properties over like however many square mileage, and then they completely flooded these towns, and then like they flooded, like they just threw water over like foundations, like there was stadium seating, there was trees. If the trees were like 40 feet below the top of the water, they didn't have to cut them down. Like they literally flooded a town without doing anything. They wow. I think they just took down buildings and that's about it. Yeah, you'll have to listen to that one. It's interesting.
They did the same thing down on the border of Texas and Mexico on a lake.
Really?
Yeah, it really good fishing lake now, but yeah, they're like 100 feet underneath water, the houses and stuff like that.
That creeps me out.
I mean, when it's a ghost town, it really, they were just going to get tore down.
No, what creeps me out is swimming in a lake and then like you could be swimming and there's like stadium seating underneath you or like a horse racetrack and you're like.
Yeah, but you would never know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, this lake that I'm talking
about.
It's
not high. It's not deep enough.
Well, yeah. Sometimes when the levels would drop, like you would see like the top of a tree poking out or something like that. Like that's not creepy.
It's creepy.
That's creepy to me. Okay, so let's go back to the story. So the timeline is August 30th, 1974. The family sets out on their camping trip. So the next morning, September 1st at 9 a.m., Richard and his son David, they walked from their campsite to the Copper General Store, which is a small little store in the area, to buy a quart of milk. So little does anybody know that this is the last sighting of the family that anybody's going to have. So they headed back to their campsite where eyewitnesses said it's probably about a 20-minute walk one way, so 40 minutes altogether. So fast forward to later in the evening, Belinda's mother actually lived 1 mile from the campsite. She lived very close, and that's probably why they camped there so much. She was expecting them to come over for dinner, but they ended up not showing. So she kind of waited around till it got evening, and then it got dark, and then the family still didn't show. So obviously she just got in her car and drove to the campsite. When she got there, it was really creepy, and not creepy in that there was anything really recognizably out of place, but creepy because it looks like the family had just been there, but none of the family members were at this campsite. So the truck was still parked there. The truck keys and Belinda's purse were on the picnic table. The diaper bag and the camp stove were set up with unused kitchen utensils, almost like they were going to cook dinner, but or something, and they didn't. Richard's fishing poles were leaning against a tree, and the truck still had all their clothing nice and folded in there. The only thing out of place was that Richard's wristwatch and his wallet were both on the ground. And when Belinda was looking through the campsite, the only thing that she could find was missing was their bathing suits. So she figured that they went swimming in the creek nearby, which is what they did all the time. So she's like, oh, I'll wait around a little bit. Maybe they just, you know, are having too much fun, and then they'll come back and they forgot to call. Mm-hmm. But once it got a little bit later, Belinda got really worried. So she ended up calling the cops, and Jackson Sheriff's Office and state troopers both arrived to the scene. They searched the campsite. There was nothing that suggested foul play. And they did what they could that night, and then they just halted everything till the next morning. And then the next morning, alarm bells really started ringing when that Copper General store that David and Richard had gone to the day before, the owner heard a scratching at the door, and the dog Droopy was actually at the door, but none of the Cowden family was at the door. So they began the search efforts for the family, which to date is one of the largest search and rescue in Oregon history. So state and local police aided in the search. U.S. Forest Service was there, National Guard, Explorer Scouts, hundreds of civilian volunteers. They used helicopters, bloodhound dogs, infrared technology. They even had geologists telling all the volunteers, like, hey, listen, like, you're like, look for overturned dirt because we are potentially looking for bodies for whatever reason. But after 6 days from the initial disappearance, they ended up calling off the search on September 7th because they literally found not one shred of evidence.
Wow.
So the police thought of a couple motives. So the first one was robbery. They were thinking that possibly it was a robbery gone wrong, but okay.
But his wallet was on the ground.
Yeah, his wallet and his watch, right?
Correct. And the watch was a gold watch and actually was deemed very valuable. And Belinda's purse wasn't rifled through and the truck was untouched. So if you're going to rob somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
Why, you know, so that one was because of those facts that was pushed to the wayside. The next one was drowning. So they were like, well, they obviously went swimming. So maybe they drowned in the river.
Right.
But with the huge search efforts and the lack of bodies that were found, they were like, that's not a feasible motive either. So anyway, motive.
Yeah. You would think you would find like maybe shoes or something like that if they went swimming. You know what I mean? Because I doubt someone's going to walk through the forest to get to, you know, the lake or the stream or whatever without shoes on.
Yeah.
Oh, and I believe I remember reading an article where they said Richard's shoes were at the campsite and he only brought one pair of shoes to go camping. So they thought that was kind of odd too. Like, where would you go? Like, you're not going to go through the forest with no shoes on.
Yeah. You're not really going to go anywhere.
Yeah. So then they had one last possibility on what happened, which was voluntary disappearing. So they thought the family basically wanted a fresh start and uprooted their lives and just took off. But after talking to family and friends, they decided that wasn't really a plausible reason either, just because they all said they were very happy. They dug into their finances and they had like minimal debt like everybody else does. I think they said they owed some money on a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
They searched their house and the residents showed that there was no intent to basically leave. There was fresh groceries in the fridge. The son, David, they had just barely redid his room before they left, and he had like a brand new kind of like space for himself, mm-hmm. and he was really excited to come back to it. So why take all the time and effort and money into redoing and redecorating his room when you're going to get up and leave?
And why are you going to leave your truck? Like, how are you going to get anywhere? Just walk? And
yeah, exactly. And Richard was a logging truck driver at the time, and you're talking September, so his business was going to pick up.
Yeah.
You know, because they're more seasonal employees. Mm-hmm. So he, you know, it was coming to the time when they were going to make more money. So that also didn't kind of coincide with that voluntary disappearing theory.
It seems like a lot of times I listen to podcasts about missing couples or just missing people in general, they always have so many other theories. It's never just, oh, these people are missing. Let's find these people.
Yes.
You know, it's always like 10 different possible, like ridiculous, you know, theories or whatever.
Well, I don't think the public helps.
I already have a theory.
All right. Let's see it. Let's hear it.
Honestly, I think it's some type of evil shit. Like some type of evil spirit. I'm thinking about like, what's that movie called? Amityville Horror?
Oh, shit.
Something like that.
You think Richard like was possessed and killed his whole family? Yep. That's an interesting one.
I mean, obviously someone kidnapped him.
Why do you say that?
All of them?
They're all missing. Some serial killer is like, oh, perfect. I'm going to go find somebody to murder or kidnap or whatever. And now here's a whole family. As long as I take the strong ones out, I can take the kids with me. Like, it's easy.
That's a very serial killer mindset. That's not bad. That's because that's what you see, right? They go for the dad and then...
Right. They're going to go for the dad and the mom.
Yeah.
Because those are the stronger ones.
Patrick's giving me Dexter vibes right now.
Or you go for the kids and use the kids as leverage for the parents to comply with whatever you want to do. That happens too.
You could. I mean, unless he's packing.
I knew that was going to come up with you.
Yeah. Eventually.
I figured that was going to come up earlier when you were like, see, that's why I always pack when I go camping.
Yeah, that's why so I'm strapped. Can...
Well, the voluntary disappearance, I think what didn't help is like society fucking sucks. And you had so many people calling in saying, oh, yeah, I saw them in Seattle, Oregon. But they didn't say they saw them in Seattle. They said they saw them in San Francisco. Nothing obviously panned out. But I think that kind of fed into the voluntary disappearance theory as well. There was one group of witnesses that were really viable to the case, and it was a couple from LA that were camping in the area, and they went hiking in Carberry Creek where they had camped. So going back to that LA couple who was hiking in Carberry Creek, they said that they saw two men and one woman at about 5 p.m. on September 1st, the same day that family went missing. And they said that these people were in a truck and they were acting incredibly suspicious. They said that they were kind of loitering around and they gave them the vibe that they were waiting for them to leave. And the couple did feel so uncomfortable that they did just turn around and like hike back out.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I've had that before where you're like in a parking lot in your car and there's like somebody and you're like, they want me to leave so they can do some fucking suspicious activity.
I feel like... You lost a battle. You just stare at them.
No.
And then eventually they'll
let them smoke their meth in peace and be on their way. You know, if it's going to be a battle of who's more uncomfortable, I'm going to lose that every single time because I get very uncomfortable very easily.
Me too.
And so, I'm uncomfortable with discomfort. Some people are very comfortable with discomfort. They like thrive on it and I'm not.
But I feel like a lot of story. So, you know, I'm an avid listener of Morbid podcast.
Yeah.
And it's like every podcast they talk about, someone ended up hiking in the woods, saw another couple that like made them feel uncomfortable, and they ended up leaving.
Yeah.
Like this is like, this always happens.
Murder 101.
Yeah.
Like that means some shit's going down.
Yeah. So what's the moral of the story? Don't go
turn around and walk away.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be the next one's murdered.
Or stay strapped.
Oh my God. Okay. So that was the only real piece of evidence the police had on the family's disappearance. And they assigned two investigators to the case, but they literally came up with nothing for months. They briefly had a suspect in December of 1974, only a couple months after the disappearance, and it was Richard's father. But the only thing that they had that they said where they were looking at him as a suspect is because he ended up committing suicide, which I don't think that makes somebody a suspect, because later they determined like he was just so heartbroken from his family disappearing that he ended his life.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of sad. You lose your whole family.
Yeah, 100%. So fast.
Was he suspect before or after he committed suicide?
All I found out was that it was after he committed suicide. Like the police, a lot of times in certain cases, the police see committing suicide as a sign of guilt. But you usually see that with somebody who's a suspect to begin with. And then they, you know, they commit suicide for whatever reason. But he was never a suspect from what I read. Now, this case is, you know, it's in the 1970s. So doing research was really hard because I feel like every article, news article, because we know how media is, that I found, they all had like real differing stories. So I'm sure like all of this information that I'm reporting, there's going to be deviations to it because every story was completely different. I listened to multiple podcasts who covered the story and they kind of all had different scenarios of what happened. They were all similar, but some of the details were, they weren't the same.
Okay.
So basically the case went cold and there was nothing of note until about April 12th, 1975. There were two amateur gold prospectors and they were hiking in the woods approximately 7 miles from where the family went missing. And then they came across the skeletal remains of an adult male. And this guy was tied up to a tree on a steep hill. So when he called police and they started searching the hill, on top of the hill, there was a cave. And inside the cave, they found the bodies of one adult woman, a young boy, and an infant child.
Mm. Oh, wow.
The cave was covered with like rocks and twigs. And it was obvious that someone had to try to conceal the opening because the formation of the rocks and twigs was not natural. And then through dental records, they were able to identify the bodies as belonging to Richard, Belinda, David, and Melissa. So when they did the autopsies, they found that Belinda and 5-year-old David had died from multiple gunshot wounds to the head from a .22 caliber rifle. 5-month-old Melissa actually died from blunt force trauma to the head, which I think is really fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, what's the reason? You know what I mean? And then Richard's cause of death was actually undetermined because due to being exposed to the elements because he was the one that was outside. So they weren't able to find out what happened to him. I believe they said they were even looking, turning up bones for a couple months on end afterwards because, you know, animals that had gotten to the body.
Right.
So wow. Their first.
That's awful.
It's awful.
Yeah.
But their first theory that they, because obviously they come up with a new list of theories that.
Of course.
What had happened. And the first theory, and I was like, what the fuck with this theory? And so they said that it was a murder-suicide on Richard's part because he was. His body was separate from the rest of the family.
But he was tied.
He was tied up to a fucking tree.
Who the fuck is this fucking cop?
Well, hey,
they've never dealt with a murder before, hey, I feel like.
At one point, I think I read that during the search, one of the detectives was like, we're just going to have to look for buzzards. That's how we're going to find the bodies. If you find buzzards circling, you're going to go look at bodies. And then another detective was like, bro, it's November. Like, they've all migrated south. I haven't seen a buzzard in months.
Yeah, like, I feel like everybody just wrote some kind of theory, put it in a hat, and started just drawing them out. Like, this is probably what happened.
This is what we're investigating and today. And
some of the cops thought it was such a dumb idea that they did this. They just wrote bullshit-ass stuff on the piece of paper, you know? Like, what the hell?
Well, the murder-suicide theory was quickly ruled out because there was no gun or weapon recovered around the scene. There was actually no gun or weapon ever recovered for this case whatsoever.
Yeah. Plus, he's tied to a tree.
And then there some of these theories, I was trying to find where they had to back these theories, and I couldn't find any evidence on why they backed these theories. So their theory was that Richard died at the site. And that's probably because he was tied up. Like, why would you tie up a dead body? So they theorized that he died at the site. Now, they thought that Belinda, David, and Melissa died at a different location and were dumped in the cave after the fact. And they're basing that off of it's a steep hill, and it just doesn't seem plausible to carry, even with two children and an adult woman, up like their bodies up a steep hill.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought they actually drove to the hill and then dumped the bodies from there. And then something that was really interesting is one man came forward after they found the bodies, and he told police that he had searched that same cave back in September when they did that search party, and there was no bodies in there. And this town, like we said, is a mining town, so there are a lot of mining caves, and so the police were skeptical whether they were talking about the same spot. So they actually made this volunteer take them to the cave that he said he searched, and it sure enough, it was the same cave that the family was found. So that feeds into the whole, like, it must, they must have been dumped after the fact.
Or he was a murderer and he was lying.
You know, I thought that too for a second, but I couldn't find one article that pointed fingers at him for suspicion. I also could not find his name, just the place that he was from, which was like Grant Pass or something like that.
Hmm. But also with these theories, they're probably not the best of detectives. So
you gotta throw theories out there, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
It's like fun.
It's like spaghetti throwing noodles at the wall and see if it sticks. So police were able to develop a vague timeline of the day the family ended up going missing. And this was through evidence and eyewitness testimony. So they determined that Richard and David had successfully returned to the campsite. And that was important because one of their other theories was like, hey, maybe they got lost and Belinda took Melissa to go look for them and they got lost. And then now they're all lost. But people that were in the town was like, no, they camped here quite frequently. They would never get lost. They knew the trails.
Right.
Yeah. So they determined. Well, and then plus you had that half drinking quart of milk on the table.
Right.
That they bought from the store. So that also was like, no, that's not a good theory.
And I'm sure they went quite often. Even the, would you say the mother lives like a mile away and she knew where it was.
Yeah.
So if she knows where it is, it's, I mean, they've probably been there.
A few times. They even said the dog was able to find the store because the dog had been there so many times. So if the family dog's able to find his way back, you know?
Yeah.
And then they said that later in the morning, the family ended up going swimming in a creek because of the swimsuits. They said it was when they returned in the afternoon is when the police believed they ended up being abducted. Mm. And then they think they were driven to the cave and murdered. So possible suspects. And again, this is great. there was actually a motorcycle club in the area around the time that the family ended up going missing. And the police were able to track down all of the motorcycle club members. And they interviewed every single one of them was like, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about. And they all also had alibis for the time the family went missing. And then another theory that they had was that also around the time the Cowden family went missing, 8 women were also missing in, I don't want to say the area, but somewhere in that area of the state.
Mm-hmm.
But it was later determined that those 8 women were the victims of Ted Bundy.
Mm.
So, yes, because this is the 1970s when serial killers just ran rampant everywhere.
Yeah.
They did have one very viable suspect, and his name was Dwayne Lee Little. And this guy was a piece of shit. So this guy had paroled from Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem, Oregon on May 24th, 1974. So only months before that family went missing. And at the time that they disappeared, he was living with his parents in a town called, I'm going to say Rouche, R-U-C-H. And it's only about 18 miles away from Copper. So he was in Oregon State Penitentiary because in 1964, when it was either 13 or 15 years old, depending on your source. He ended up raping and murdering a teenage girl. Her name was Orla Faye Phipps from Springfield, Oregon. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about her case because her case is kind of its own story. But she was a 16-year-old high school girl who really enjoyed horseback riding. And normally when she would go horseback riding after school, her 15-year-old brother or one of her friends would accompany her. But for some reason, on Monday, November 2nd, when she ended up being murdered, she went horseback riding by herself. And when she didn't return, her father, brother, and some people from the neighborhood set out to go look for her. Now, her horse was found first, but she was nowhere to be found. And one of the neighbors ended up finding her body. And they found her on a steep trail in some bush. She was face up, her clothes were ripped, and her throat was cut.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Yeah. And then coroners later revealed that she had sustained a large injury. A large head injury due to blunt force trauma. And then aside from her throat being slit, she also had multiple stab wounds. And then also, depending on what article you read, she was sexually assaulted either before or after she died.
Interesting.
I'm going to say it was
before and after, or did you say before or
after? Okay. One of them says that it was after she died. I'm going to say before she died because there's going to be another case where he sexually assaults somebody before.
Okay.
Because I feel like necrophilia is a completely different beast in its own self,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's kind of an MO. But this guy, I'm gonna say before. So the fingers were pointed at Dwayne, because he was previously friends with Orla's brother, and she rode her horse past his property every day. So he kind of knew her routine. So he was convicted of that first degree murder. And when he went to that penitentiary, he was actually the youngest prisoner in there at the time. And he was sentenced to life in prison. But can anyone guess what happened?
Oh, my God.
Due to the Oregon state laws and him being a juvenile, he ended up being eligible for parole after 10 years. And that's why he paroled out literally 10 years later.
Pulled a Bill Cosby.
So
he didn't parole out.
I know, but still.
So in 1974, when he paroled, and this is going to be his story. We're going to take out the Cowden story right now. But in around Christmas in December of 1974, his girlfriend caught him cheating. So she told the police about him saying that he had a 22 caliber rifle. Now, at the time, none of this is connected, but this is just the side story to know kind of what aligns with the timeline. So they ended up violating his parole in January of 1975. And then he paroled again in 1977. So he was out from, he got out of prison in 1974 in May. Then he was violated in 1975. So he was out essentially that time. And he went back to prison in January 1975.
Gotcha.
Now he was in prison from 1975 to April of 1977. So when he gets out of prison in 1977, it doesn't take long because for him to go back to his old ways, because on June 2nd, 1980, this 23-year-old girl, she's pregnant. Her name is Margie Hunter, and she's driving near Portland, Oregon, and her car breaks down. So she ends up hitchhiking. Mm.
Classic.
It is classic. But at the time, that wasn't a big deal. Like everybody hitchhiked.
And you didn't have a cell phone. So you break down in the middle of
BFE.
Yeah, you got to go somewhere.
Is Portland, Oregon BFE?
Well, is it in Portland, Oregon?
I don't know.
Or outside?
I don't know the geography well enough.
No, I don't know. And I mean, it's not as big back then as it is now.
That's so true.
There probably was some rural areas. Yeah. I don't know.
I remember watching a documentary and they were saying hitchhiking was actually cool back then in the 70s. Like it was cool to hitchhike. Like if you told your friends like, yeah, I hitchhiked there.
Yeah.
Like now we'd be like, bro, you don't have a car. Like, where's your fucking car?
Right.
You didn't Uber? Like you don't have any money to send an Uber?
Yeah.
But at the time I was like, yeah, man, I hitchhiked. But could you guys, I mean, you can guess who picked her up. Dwayne Lee Little happened to be driving by, picked her up, sexually assaulted her, beat her, thought he killed her and then left her for dead. But it turns out her and her newborn child, unborn child, had survived the assault.
Wow.
They were able, with the baby inside her womb, so able to testify against him. But she was able to testify against him.
She's part of it, you know?
So he ended up getting 3 consecutive life sentences for that.
Good.
That attempted murder.
Good.
Yeah.
But the conviction ended up leading authorities to looking at him as a suspect. Because when they put the timeline together and when he got paroled from Oregon State Penitentiary that first time, they were like, this is a viable candidate.
But I feel like, you know, in Oregon, 22 caliber rifle, I mean, it's probably everybody had it. Yeah.
So, okay. The thing is with this case and they looked in the cave, they did find one casing.
Mm.
And the casing, and this is where I'm going to ask you, Fowler, because this is why I didn't kind of throw this in there, because I don't know as much about it, because they said that the casing, it wasn't the casing, it was the bullet, belonged to a certain kind of rifle.
Okay.
And I don't know if a bullet can belong to a certain kind of rifles. Again, like I was just, you know, the little that I know, I'm like, this doesn't add up. Like any kind of rifle can have different kinds of bullets.
Yeah, you can shoot any kind of 22 ammo through any kind of 22 rifle or pistol.
Correct. And then I started thinking like a little bit more forensically and I'm like, well, maybe the rifling on the bullet is linked to a certain kind of rifle.
I could see that 100%.
Yeah. Okay.
But nowadays with forensics. But back in the 70s, no.
Well, at the time, they had linked that bullet having belonged to a specific brand of rifle, which I didn't recognize. It started with an M. But
Marlin?
Yes. How did you know that? Oh, my gosh.
That's super
common. That was the rifle. Well, that's the rifle that Dwayne Lee Little's mom owned.
Interesting.
So that was also...
But Marlin's like a super common rifle.
I never heard of it. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest ones ever. They're from the 1800s when they started making lever action rifles. So super popular.
How does he know this?
I don't know. This is why he's here. But okay, so the problem was when they finally got a really good suspect is that they couldn't go back to the scene of the crime because he was convicted in 1980 and the city of Copper was inundated with water at the time.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so that's why when I was talking about earlier, we're going back. That's,
yeah,
you know.
They're going to have to fucking scuba dive down
there. The evidence literally washed away.
I mean, it's funny, but it's sad.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the family, but holy shit.
Yeah. And then police, when they were getting a timeline of Little at the time that the family disappeared, he was actually in the city of Copper on that Labor Day weekend. And they suspected that the two men and that woman at the campground that that LA couple saw were Little and his parents.
Yeah.
So, of course, they denied any knowledge of the disappearances or knowing the Cowden family. And then they were kind of vague on whether they were even there or not. But Little was spotted at a local restaurant around noon the day the Cowden family was abducted. That same afternoon, an elderly couple claimed they saw a car matching Little's description driving a man and a woman, which are assumed to be his parents. Little was also witnessed getting gas in the same area the Cowden family went missing on the same weekend. And then, I mean, obviously you can have the argument that people just thought they saw them, but then there was a minor who owned a cabin nearby.
Yeah.
Like a minor, not like an underage child.
Right.
Okay.
You're talking about Oregon.
I knew what you meant.
At first when I read it, I was like, why is a minor owning a cabin?
A copper miner or a gold miner?
Yeah. I was thinking like a young child owned a cabin. Yeah. Anyways, he said that Little and his parents had signed a guest book on Monday, September 2nd that he kept for visitors, which I feel like is pretty damning that they were there.
Yeah.
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 But I feel like, okay, wait. That's a big jump from assaulting one woman to killing a whole fucking family.
Correct. Correct.
That's.
I mean, he just escalated. And that's the only ones we know of.
But even killing a baby, that's like on a whole new level. Like, I don't know.
I mean, if you're sick, you're sick.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
I feel like if you're a piece, I don't know.
So I'm thinking with this case is like, what's his motive normally? He sexually assaults women, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And also something that they had found back in the campsite I should have mentioned was that Belinda's mother had found one of her blouses ripped, like it got ripped off, but she had assumed it was used as like a burping rack for the baby. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't have one.
Mm.
So that's something police ended up coming back to later, being like, well, maybe she was sexually assaulted by this man. Now, one of Little's cellmates claimed that Little confessed to the murders of the Cowden family when they were in custody together.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
It is interesting, but I don't know about you guys, but I don't give a lot of clout to jailhouse.
Okay, but did he know about, you know, like, was he a suspect already?
I believe so. Or was
this later on?
I believe he's already a suspect. So,
yeah.
Also, something to note is that when they looked back at his cellmate, he had accused a lot of his cellmates of accusing or confessing to unsolved murders as a bargaining chip.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes, for a shorter sentence on his convictions.
Imagine that.
Yes. But to date, no forensic evidence has ever been recovered linking Little to the case besides those eyewitness testimonies, putting him in the place around the same time of the disappearances.
Wow.
So it's 47 years later. The case remains unsolved. Little has never been charged with the crime. He's still serving his three consecutive life sentences in Oregon State Penitentiary.
How old is he?
You're asking me to do math now.
I mean, how old was he at the time?
He was 15 in 1964 when he committed that same, about.
1964? So the guy's 67 years old.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. And then the police say that they've ruled out every suspect of the case, which we saw were pretty solid suspects.
Yeah.
But Dwayne Lee Little was the only one not ruled out.
Just write a letter to that guy. Tell him, dude, just confess. Get it over with. Hey, give some peace.
Our shit would throw up. Our shit would blow up if this guy was like admitting.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I'm going to try to do it.
You should.
Get him on the horn.
He'll respond.
We'll see it.
Yeah.
I'll send him a picture of my feet. Get like a pedicure. He seems like one that'd be so into that. Gross. I'll send you one more. The sock's gonna be off this time if you Anyways, like I said, at first it like really intrigued me, but I don't know. We should definitely cover the Maria Bassanio case the next time. But yeah, that's the Cowden family murders.
It was good.
Completely unsolved.
That was a good one.
I think that was really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
That's it. Heard of a murder. All right. Until next time. See you.
Bye.